Dave and I joke that we've mastered fighting in our marriage.
Yes, we have.
But what we've really learned is that stressful situations trigger different reactive coping styles in each of us, which can really harm relationships.
Oh, yeah.
Ron and Nan Deal have created an assessment to help you discover your style. So take it at familylife.com/mindfulmarriage and get chapter one of their book. Go to familylife.com/mindfulmarriage to start building better relationships mindfully.
I had a woman ask me one time, can you love your husband if you hate him? I had to give some thought to that.
Yeah.
But I'm convinced you can.
What do you mean?
Because in the Bible, love is not basically a feeling. It's an attitude.
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Dave Wilson.
And I'm Ann Wilson. And you can find us at familylifetoday.com. This is Family Life Today. We had a great conversation with Gary Chapman and his
book.
He is just like a genius.
Every time he's here.
I know.
His book's called A Simple Guide for a Better Marriage. And we're going to jump back in and have another conversation with Gary about this topic. Yeah, I'm guessing some may not know the five love languages.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
Walk us through. Have you done this a few times, the five love languages?
A few times, you know.
How many years ago?
You're right. Millions of people have heard the term love languages, but many people don't have the concept.
Yeah.
You know, that out of these five, each of us has a primary love language. And if you don't speak their primary love language, they won't feel loved, even though you're speaking some of the others. Words of affirmation. These are in no particular order. Words of affirmation. You look nice in that outfit. I appreciate what you did.
Thanks.
Using words to build the person up. You know, the ancient proverb says life and death is in the power of the tongue.
Proverbs 18.
Yep, 21.
Yeah.
So words of affirmation. Now, I did have a lady say to me, well, Dr. Chapman, I'd like to give him words of affirmation, but I can't think of anything good to say about the man. And I said, well, does he ever take a shower? She said, well, yes. I said, well, how often? She said, well, every day. I said, if I were you, I'd start there. I said, there are men who don't. So there's always something you can find to say good about the worst person of all with the words of affirmation. And then acts of service, doing something for the person that you know they would like for you to do. In a marriage, that would be such things as cooking meals, washing dishes, vacuuming floors, mowing grass, walking the dog, changing the baby's diaper, just anything that you know would be meaningful to them. The old saying, actions speak louder than words. Mm. If this is their love language, actions will speak louder than words. Mm. And then there's gifts. It's universal to give gifts. And the gifts don't have to be expensive. We've always said it's the thought that counts. I say to guys, you know, you can get free flowers in the spring and summer. Just go in your backyard and pick one. Do what your kids do. And then number four is quality time, giving them your undivided attention. I call it sit down and listen time. You know, we talk about a quiet time with God or a sit down time with God. Well, why not have a sit down time with our spouse every day and just share some things that are going on in our lives?
So, I think that undivided attention.
Yeah.
It's not easy to do now with all of our devices and phones. And yeah, so I like that.
You're exactly right. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to always be sitting down. You can be taking a walk down the road or going out to eat.
Right.
Assuming that you talk.
Yeah.
And then number five is physical touch. And in a marriage, that's such things as holding hands and kissing and embracing, the whole sexual part of marriage, arm around the shoulder, driving down the road, you put your hand on their leg. So the basic idea, as I said earlier, is that each of us has a primary love language. One of those five speaks more deeply to us than the other four. Now, all of them are fine. We're not going to turn anyone away. But if we don't receive love in our primary language, we will not feel loved, even though the person may be speaking some of the other languages.
Mm-hmm. Do we usually speak the language that we know the best? If my love language is words, do I generally give words?
About 75% of the people, the one they want to receive is the one they most naturally give.
Okay.
About 25% of the people will speak one of the other languages, but it's not what they want. They were taught to speak that language when they were growing up. You know, if the dad told the son, always buy the woman gifts, well, then he buys her gifts. Yeah. Not because he wants gifts, because that's what he was taught to do. But most naturally, we speak our own life. That's what I did for Carolyn. Before I came down off the high, it was early little while, I gave her positive words. I didn't know anything about love languages, but I just told her, you know, well, I like to hear words. I gave her words. And one night she said to me, and I told her often, I love you, honey. I'm so glad I married you. I mean, I just love you, love you, love you. And one night she said, you keep on saying I love you. If you love me, why don't you help me? I said, what do you mean? She said, well, you don't ever offer to wash the dishes or vacuum the floors or clean the toilet. I mean, you don't offer to do anything. I didn't say this, but what I was thinking, what are you talking about? My mother did those things. Whoa. We bring our history with us.
Yeah, we do.
Mama did it. You do it. But looking back on that now, she was telling me her love language.
Yeah.
You know, which is one way to figure out your spouse's love language. What do they complain about? The complaint reveals the love language. If they say, I just feel like we don't spend any time together anymore, they're telling you quality time is their language.
So you really got to listen.
Yeah, yeah. I was with a woman the other day, and she was saying, you should see my to-do list. And I thought, and I said, and how's it doing? She goes, it's been there forever. To me, it's like, oh, acts of service is her love language, and she's super frustrated.
Well, what about the wife or the husband? Could be go either way that expects you to know. They don't tell you. They're just like, read my mind, watch my life. You should know.
We can read his book. And you have ways to take the test if you don't know.
Yeah, there is a quiz at fivelovelanguages.com. But here are three simple ways to discover another person's language. One is observe their behavior, which is what you mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, how do they typically express love to you and other people?
Mm-hmm.
That's a clue. And then what do they request most often? For example, my teenage daughter, her request during those years, Dad, can we take a walk after dinner? She wanted my time, just two of us walking together and talking. And then what do they complain about most often? You put those three together, you can pretty well figure out a person's primary love language.
You've written books about your kids' love language.
Yeah.
I remember reading that. And then I asked each of our sons, thinking they would all say the same thing, how do you know that I love you? And they each said something different.
Yeah.
Which I felt like I was parenting them the same, but that helped me to discover their love language.
Yeah.
And that's really important to know as parents with our kids, too.
Yeah, absolutely. That book, The Five Love Languages of Children, has helped so many parents.
Yes.
Because I say to parents, the question is not, do you love your children?
Yeah.
The question is, do your children feel loved?
Yes. Yeah.
And I say to the parents also, please don't hear me saying that you only speak a child's primary love language.
That's good.
No, heavy doses of the primary, but sprinkle in the other four. We would like that child to learn how to receive love and later how to give love in all five languages.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The healthiest adult.
Well, let me ask you this, Gary, because in your new book, you're talking about conflict resolution.
Yeah.
Does love language play into that of even how you have conflict? Does that play into it at all?
I think it may. If you each feel love, for example, you're less likely to lose it and yell and scream at each other.
You're more gracious to one another.
Yeah, if you know that your spouse's language is words of affirmation and you have a conflict, less likely because you still can do it. You do what comes natural for you.
Yeah.
If you're an arguer or a yeller, well, then you're going to yell, you know. But I think it involves recognizing that you're married to a human and humans will not have the same thoughts and the same feelings on any topic.
Yeah.
So, first of all, what we have to decide is to try to understand the other person's position.
How do you do that?
It helps, I think, if you structure the conversation when you have a conflict and say, honey, why don't you take 5 minutes and tell me your side, and I'm going to try to understand you. And then I'll have 5 minutes to tell my side, and you can try to understand me.
So you're not in the heat of the battle at this point.
That's right.
You're kind of waiting for the feelings to subside.
Yeah. A couple has to have a plan for handling conflicts. If they don't have a plan, they're going to do what comes natural to them.
Yelling.
Yeah. So I'd say, but if you both agree on this, first of all, each of you can call a timeout. If you realize you're about to escalate, you can call a timeout. Mm-hmm. Just use the timeout sign. And that means I need a break. Okay, so let them take a break. They can walk around the block. My mother used to say, before you say anything to anybody when you're angry, count to 10. I think mother was on the right track. Yeah. I'd suggest 100 or 1,000. Yeah. 10's not long enough.
Can you take a timeout overnight?
You can, yeah. If it's late at night especially.
Yeah.
But when you do come back, then let's take turns talking. Because here's what we discovered. In a conflict situation, the average person will listen to the other person 17 seconds before they interrupt and give their idea.
Really?
Yeah, 17 seconds. That's not right. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, that's not right. Da-da. Now we're back into an argument. But if you take turns, I'm going to be the listener when you're talking, and I'm trying to understand where you're coming from. Try to put yourself in their shoes and look at the world through their eyes. And you can ask questions to clarify, and they can clarify their statements. And then you can honestly say, it might take a few turns, but you can honestly say eventually, you know, honey, now that I hear you, I can see where you're coming from. I can see how that makes sense. Now you're not an enemy.
Well, and you've then, just de-escalated everything.
That's right. And they eventually can say the same thing to you. Okay, honey, now I see your side. Now, how can we solve the problem? Mm. Now you're not trying to win an argument. Now you're trying to solve the problem. Because if you win an argument with your spouse, they lost.
Yeah.
It's no fun to live with a loser.
Mm.
Why would you create one?
The relationship loses.
Yeah, yeah. We're on the same team.
Yeah.
You won, they lost. No, they're on your team. You both lost.
Gary, what if you have a spouse that's not willing to do that? Like they just get defensive, you know?
Not talking about me, are you?
No, you're not, actually. No, you're not.
There are times.
There used to be that we would both get defensive.
Oh, yeah.
But if one of them would say, hey, let's just calm down and let me hear your side. Gosh, if you would have asked me that back in the day, I would have certainly talked about my side. But because you asked me, I think I would have been more careful with my words.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good idea. You take that approach, you're right. They will say it, and they will say it without yelling and screaming because you're asking them to share, you know. And you get that going both ways. But see, most couples don't have a plan.
Yeah.
They just do what comes natural.
And what emotions, they just go with where they're emotions are going.
Yeah, they're led by their emotions.
I mean, what do you do with the anger that rises up when you're really disagreeing?
Yeah.
Or defensive.
And you do not see their side.
Yeah.
Or if you do and you understand it, you're like, you're wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're just wrong.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you shouldn't say, you're totally wrong.
But I mean, we talk about, you know, anger's plugged into something, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. What do you do with that?
Well, I think we first of all have to acknowledge that we're about to explode. I mean, if you want to be productive, right, most couples aren't thinking about how to be productive in this situation.
No.
They're just doing what comes natural for them.
Yeah.
And just both of you doing what comes natural, you destroy each other. You destroy the relationship. So you have to wake up one day. Sometimes it happens at a conference like you were talking about.
Yeah.
Sometimes it happens in reading a book. You wake up and say, you know, we don't have to do this forever. Let's think our way through this, how to do something different here. But this is one of the biggest lessons couples either learn or don't learn. And couples that don't learn how to solve conflicts without arguing are going to be yelling and screaming at each other when they're 90 years old.
And then they're teaching their kids how to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the kids grow up in that framework, and that's what they do.
Mm. Yeah, I sat with a couple. I mean, everything you're saying, I think, requires humility.
Yeah.
Might be one of the greatest character qualities that build a marriage. And this couple came in, and I'm not a counselor, but, you know, I'm a marriage writer, speaker. So anyway, I sat with them, and I asked them, you know, have you ever been to a therapist before, a counselor? Yeah. What did they say? We should get a divorce. Really? At a church? Yeah, at a church. Really? Okay. And I'm telling you, an hour later, Gary, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, oh, my goodness. I could see why this guy said that. There was pride against pride.
Yeah.
I'm like, you guys have, I said, you have to decide, do you want to be married?
Yeah.
Because right now, you are not willing to make any concessions.
Yeah.
And there was just no humility. Is that at the heart of, you know, Simple Guide to Better Marriage? Is you got to put away the pride, the sin nature, you got to bury it?
I don't think most people are thinking along those lines.
Yeah.
But yes, I think the whole thing I mentioned earlier in terms of the attitude of Christ, you know, Philippians chapter 2.
Yeah.
He was God.
Yeah.
And he humbled himself and became a man.
Yeah.
And when he got on level ground, he stepped down further to death on a cross.
Mm.
So have that attitude. Again, we don't have that attitude by nature.
Right.
It's
right.
A matter of saying to God, Lord, I'm not there. I don't have that attitude, but I want it. I want to have the attitude of Christ. You know, this is why Christians have an advantage to non-Christians in relationships. We have outside help from God. Anyone who says to God, I want the attitude of Christ toward my spouse, Lord, work in my heart. God will answer that
prayer. He will. That's a prayer he'll answer.
And in our 45 years, we've had the Holy Spirit convict us. Yeah. When that pride rises up, we want to go our own way, but the Holy Spirit just nudges us, and we can feel God's pressure of, don't say it, don't do it, don't act like that. And that is the benefit of walking in Christ and even maintaining a healthy, good relationship with Him.
Yeah.
Well, another aspect of that, and this relates to conflict, is forgiveness.
Yeah.
How do we navigate that world? Because you're hurt deeply.
Yeah.
And yet we're commanded by God. We've been forgiven. We forgive others.
Yeah.
Ephesians 4.
Yeah.
How do you get there?
I think, first of all, we have to understand what forgiveness is. Mm. Got a lot of fuzzy thinking on that. Forgiveness is not a feeling. You know, there's three Hebrew words and four Greek words that are translated forgive or forgiveness in the New Testament. But the two key ideas are, one of them is to pardon the person. I'm not going to make you pay for this. I'm going to lift the penalty. I'm going to show mercy and not justice. And the other is to take away. The Bible says God removes our sins from us as far as the east is from the west. It's to take away the barrier that was created by what you did to hurt me. Mm. And that emotional barrier will sit there until there's an apology and forgiveness. Mm. But forgiveness says, I'm going to remove the barrier so that our relationship can go forward. Now, the forgiveness thing is the choice to do those two things. It's not a feeling. Because some people will say, well, I just don't feel like forgiving them. They've hurt me so deeply. I understand that. You don't have to have positive feelings. You're making a choice. I think also it's important to know what forgiveness does not do. Forgiveness does not destroy the memory. I've heard people say, if you haven't forgotten, you haven't forgiven.
That forgive and forget idea.
Yeah. No, no. Everything that's ever happened is stored in our brain. Sometimes it seeps down to the subconscious mind, but it's still there. And the memory will come back to you. And forgiveness does not remove all the painful emotions. Mm. When the memory comes back, the emotions come back. You can feel angry again. You can feel hurt. You can feel many emotions. So what do you do if they've apologized and you've made the choice to forgive them and you remember it and the emotions come back? I think you take it to God and you say, Lord, you know what I'm remembering and you know what I'm feeling again. But I thank you that I made the choice to forgive them. Now help me to do something good today. And you move out to do something good today. Don't be controlled by your emotions or by your memories.
How do we do that? How are we not controlled by our emotions and our memories when some of them are very traumatic?
Oh, yes. I think it's first of all acknowledging, okay, I'm remembering it. Okay, I'm feeling this again.
So it's like lament, acknowledging the feeling.
Yeah. And God already knows, but we're telling him, you know what I'm remembering? You know what I'm feeling again? But I don't want to be controlled by this. You can love them even with those feelings, hurt feelings. You can still reach out to speak their language or some other way communicate love to them. The other big factor is forgiveness does not rebuild trust. How many times have they been in my office together working on rebuilding their marriage? Maybe the husband was unfaithful, or maybe it could have been the wife. But she will say, or he will say, you know, Dr. Chapman, I've forgiven him. And that's why we're here, trying to work on our marriage. But to be honest with you, I don't trust him. And I say, welcome to the human race. Mm-hmm. Forgiveness does not restore trust. Forgiveness opens the door to the possibility that trust can be reborn. We lose trust when the person is untrustworthy. And I would say to the husband, if he's the guilty party, I'd say, here's my suggestion if you want her to trust you again. You say to her, my computer is yours anytime you want to look at it. My phone is yours.
All the passwords, everything.
Yes. Yeah. And if I tell you I'm going over to George's house to help him work on his car, if you want to come over there and see if I'm there, it's fine.
Or you can put me on the GPS on your phone.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I'm through with deceit. I've hurt you enough. I don't want to hurt you anymore. Mm. You take that approach, she'll come to trust you again. It might be 3 months or 6 months or 9 months, but she will come to trust you because you're being trustworthy.
You earned it.
And if a spouse won't do that, if they say, like, no, now you're trying to control me, what would you say?
I would just try to help them understand that you want to trust them again, but you have to have some evidence in order to trust them again.
Yeah.
But I have forgiven you. I do want to work on our marriage. That's why we're going for counseling. And I want to trust you again.
Mm. I mean, if a guy has had an affair, or and it could be a woman, and says, no, I'm not going to let you see my phone.
Yeah.
I'm not giving you the passwords.
Yeah.
Is he serious?
I would certainly question that. I don't know. You don't. We all know his heart,
right?
But
yeah.
his actions are showing that that he's not open for her to have evidence to trust him again.
I think our last question is: Dave and I have a great relationship in terms of going deep. We know each other's fears, our hurts, the things that like hard things to talk about. We'll go there. We call it a level five. And I noticed that you have five levels of communication in this book. Because it comes naturally to us, I just assume that most people would go to these deeper levels of intimacy in conversation, but they don't.
No.
Can you go through those? And I don't think a lot of people understand the levels of where we can go in a relationship, and then is that important?
No, I think many couples just have hallway talk.
Me too. Mm.
Did you sleep well last night, honey?
Yeah,
slept well.
It's cold out today.
Yeah. Did you have a good day today, honey? Yeah, had a good day. And that's the same thing you'd say walking down the hallway at work.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, so it's just hallway talk.
Yeah.
You know? Then, I don't remember exactly the titles that I use on the five. But
well, we've got them.
We have them. Okay, well, cliche.
Yeah. And that's just, again, very similar to that, but it's just light talk.
How you
light
doing?
Talk. Yeah, how you doing?
And you don't want to really know.
Yeah. And then there's intellectual, maybe it's one of them, intellectual talk, where we're sharing our thoughts with each other.
Yeah, the facts.
And, and our visions and dreams for the future.
Yeah.
And those kind of,
and then we get into opinions.
Yeah.
And opinions, that's a little deeper.
Yeah. And then there's emotions, where we feel free to share our emotions and say, honey, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm feeling discouraged today. And here's what happened at work and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Many couples never get there.
Right.
To where they're sharing how they feel, not just in the marriage, but in other situations and things that are
going on. Why do you think they don't go there?
I don't know, except that some of us have the feeling, well, I shouldn't have those kind of feelings, you know. I shouldn't be discouraged, or I shouldn't be whatever I'm feeling.
And maybe it feels like a weakness.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah. And then there's what I call truth talk. And that's what we're really being open and honest with each other and just sharing life fully with each other and helping each other process life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we all would like to be, or at least some people don't even have the vision of that, to know what that would really look like, you know, where you just really share your heart with each other and you're there and you're praying for each other and you're encouraging each other and you're speaking each other's love language. When there are problems, you're sitting down and looking at them and processing them together.
How have you and Carolyn gotten to that depth of conversation? Does it come naturally now? You've been doing it.
It does
a long
now,
time.
After all these years. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been that way for a good
long
time.
Well, it took, what, 60 years?
Yeah, it took 60 years. No, we've had a good marriage, of course, for a long, long time now. Of course, I've learned in my counseling others, I've learned things that helped me in my marriage, you know, in those early years. I remember, man, when I would sit there and listen to people and I just shoot up a prayer. I say, God, I don't have a clue what to tell these people, you know, and God brings in my mind something that I would never have even thought about, you know. God helps us in whatever ministry we have. He enables us to do that ministry, you know, and then we learn in the process.
I know that I learned that when Ann and I like go out on a date, she wants on that date to go to level five. She doesn't want one, two, or three. She wants to talk about not just me, mostly us.
I want to know how he's doing inside. I want to know what he's feeling, and I want him to know me. And so when I'm asking, like, how are you doing? And he goes, I'm fine.
But I realized she wasn't feeling loved by that.
Yeah.
It was like I was avoiding it. I was like, can't we just have fun? Let's go to a movie. Let's laugh. And we'll do that too.
Yeah,
but there was something in her. It was like, I want to know you. I want us to be great.
And Gary, I will say this.
Yeah.
Getting into the deeper parts, I think it's so important because God put us together as one to know each other intimately. Not just physically, but emotionally.
And I love this book because it's a simple guide. You know, it is. It's
chapters are so
quick.
Little.
It's practical insights. Every couple needs to thrive. There's the book. We got it in the show notes at familylifetoday.com. I would encourage you to get a few.
Family Life Today is a donor-supported production of Family Life, a crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.